Welcome to Season 7 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Daniel Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
Check out two of Allplay's new tiny games. First, we have Movie Night Movie Night, a cooperative game where you and your friends try to think of the perfect movie to watch together. Tap into your collective movie knowledge and come up with a movie everyone can agree on before time runs out. At the start of the round, you're going to draw a card that says movie has ... column. For example, female main character. When the group has named a movie matching that description, flip the next description card. If it fits the movie you just named, add the description to the movie doesn't have column. For example, for one round, Frozen was the name of a movie with a female main character. In round two, the description, animation, was drawn. Now, the group has to name a movie that has a female main character, but isn't an animation, such as Hunger Games. Keep doing this until you flip five descriptions and name a final movie. Do this all within the time limit in order to win. And if you're more of a book person than a movie person, Allplay also has a game called Book Night that plays the same, but with books. So check out both of these new tiny games at allplay.com. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to remind everyone that Unpub Festival 2026 is coming March 12th through 15th over in the Baltimore area. If you haven't signed up, I highly recommend you do. We do have some fun panels that were announced, such as the keynote, fostering a local playtesting community, online playtesting, a crash course in game manufacturing, volunteering with Unpub, design to doorstep a last mile perspective, self-publishing for self-starters, pitch better, what's holding you back from getting you pitched, promoting local tabletop economy, designing strategy games from entry level to Euro depth, designing party games and getting them published, and many more. And the best part is, you're going to hear from people like me, Elizabeth Hargrave, who did Wingspan, Scott Brady from Hughes & Q's, Connie Vogelman is going to be there as our keynote speaker, who created both Wormspan, Apiary, and has some other cool designs coming out in the future. So lots of big names, lots of interesting subjects. I highly recommend checking them out at Unpub Festival 2026, March 12th through 15th. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 136, Three Tricky Pigs. Today, we are joined by Steven Ungaro, my co-designer on Tricky Kids and a freelance game designer. I'm so happy to have my butt on the show. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Danielle.
This is great. We met many years ago, back when I lived in Chicago, and it's so cool to see that we're both now published game designers. So wild.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like, I love that you are doing this, and I love that we were kind of started on this journey at the same time, and it's been amazing to watch you in particular just grow with like multiple podcasts, a bunch of games out there. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I always think of us as being in like the same graduating class, like we went to school together or something.
Yes. And then I like moved back in with my parents. But then you like immediately blossomed. You're like, oh, I just landed like, an amazing job.
And then I lost it. And then I got another one. And then I lost it. And then I got another one. But I mean, we both landed in the way that we have games out. But like, I know you, but the audience doesn't. How did you start designing games?
You know, I got into, you know, this hobby, however we want to call it, these types of board games and stuff, maybe like 2016, 17 or so. And I definitely had that thing of just like, as soon as I started playing them, I was like, oh, I want to do this. I want to make these. And my sort of approach to that was research. So for me, that is going to Gen Con and going to conventions and getting on BGG, finding out more about all the games. I was listening to the Ludology podcast, right, going through like the back catalog. I mean, that's when it was like Jeff Engelstein and Ryan Sturm.
Oh, wow. You started that early?
Yeah, I went all the way back to like, you know, and they were just teaching me the basics of game design in general. It was such a perfect thing of, I don't know, it comes with good and bad because it was an amazing education. And at the same time, for all the ideas I thought that I had, it's like, oh, there is so much that I don't know.
That's so interesting. I'm trying to think when I started Ludology, I think it was Emma Larkin and Gil Hova were the hosts. And then when I was on Ludology as a guest, it was Erica Buarez and Sen Fun Lim. That podcast is one that's amazing where it keeps going, even though it has changed hosts. And I hope that like someday both of my podcasts end up doing that. I mean, I hope to keep doing this for quite some time, but I don't want it to die out when I'm gone.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool. I mean, just a shout out Ludology in particular, that like that podcast feels like it has evolved in the way that like board games themselves has evolved and stuff, right? It just starts out with like two guys getting really, really nerdy on like deep diving on mechanisms until it blossoms into talking about, you know, sort of the softer side of everything towards, you know, marketing and accessibility. And that comes with the hosts, and you see that in games themselves. And I just love that part of it.
Yeah, I remember when I was on there, it was for Making Her Story was the episode title, and it was 303, which crazy, that was back in 2023. And it was interesting for us to like kind of talk about the design challenge of making a game about women. Like, this is the theme. How do you do that? And just like going from there in that conversation, like I still remember a lot of the questions they asked because it was so interesting because no one had asked me those questions. I feel like I've been on many podcasts at this point and I get asked a lot of the same stuff, but that one was unique. I really enjoyed it. And that's great that you researched to kind of get yourself to be a better designer.
Yeah, I find that that's just my way into things. And even as I started designing like trick-taking games, I went down further rabbit holes of like trick-taking, you know, language and research and all that kind of stuff.
Which I appreciate. For anyone who doesn't know, Tricky Kids, this was Steven and I, and I don't like trick-taking games. This kid knows like everything there is to know, I feel like, about trick-taking games. You're like a savant. I don't know. Is that the right word for that?
I'll take savant.
Yeah?
I will take that.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah, that's what I'm giving you as your title, but I love the fact that I could bounce my crazy-ass ideas, and you actually knew whether or not they existed, so... It was fantastic.
That was so fun with Tricky Kid, just being like a wide open canvas of potential ideas and like so much to try. So
no, and it's cool because now I'm seeing there is another trick taking game coming out where you're writing in things, and I'm like, oh, okay. So now this is going to be the renaissance. There's going to be a ton more of these dry erase marker trick takers.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll try them, see if I like them. Maybe that'll be like the form of trick taking I enjoy.
Yeah, anything that where you can dry erase and just put your own numbers on there. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yep. I like to be creative, and I apparently keep dry erase markers in business. I have too many prototypes with them. Yeah, but we're here to talk about Three Tricky Pigs, yet another trick-taking game. Want to tell me about this design and where the inspiration came from?
Yeah, Three Tricky Pigs is a trick-taking game for 3 to 5 players. It's a game based on the story of the three little pigs, where you've got different suits, the suits being straw, sticks, wolf, and bricks. And in general, you're going to make a bid after you've been dealt your hand. There's lots of different kinds of bids that you can make. And the gameplay is that if there is no wolf present in the trick, the low card will win because the laziest pig got away with it when the wolf didn't show up. If a wolf is in the trick, the highest card will win, which is usually going to be a wolf either blowing down like straw and stick houses or a brick house. Which are those cards are typically higher than the wolf. That's kind of the gist of it. There's some huff and puff cards in there, which you can use to add to your cards and change the value of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, where'd the thought come in for this?
I honestly wish I could tell you. You know, I'm sort of just, you find themes everywhere. I knew I wanted to do a trick-taking game where the suits had kind of different numbers. So in the game, the straw and the sticks are only 1 through 10, and the wolves are 11 to 20, and the bricks are 20 to 30, roughly. I think it was just one of those things where it was on my mind, and maybe I saw the three little pigs and was like, oh yeah, sticks are better than straw, and bricks are better than that, and a wolf is, you know, and I just have trick-taking on the brain. And so it was like, okay, yeah, that works. I went back through my notes to prepare for this, and like it was just a note from 2022 that says, game idea, trick-taking game with suits based on the three little pigs. And like, that's the full note. And then it was first played 11 months later.
Oh my God, that's so good. Are you like me where you keep a design journal?
Of designs as they go, I sort of manage things either just like in my notes app, where I'm in a Discord server with a lot of people who are designing mostly trick-taking games, climbing, shedding games, card games, that sort of thing. And it all sort of ends up getting logged there because I put a lot of like just playtest feedback and everything there. So that's kind of where that all ends up.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know for me, you've seen my notebook. I like to add a bunch of stickers that kind of show who I am as a person. And all of my playtest notes and any idea I come up with ends up in these little notebooks that I keep. Granted, I get a little scared that if something ever happens to them, I'm a little screwed.
Yeah, your notebook is amazing, though. Just seeing it, I mean, you're incredibly organized. And I love like the sort of routine that you have of that because I feel terrible sometimes when it comes time to give credit to playtesters, and I'm like, oh, did you ever play this? I wish I could remember. I feel so bad because I'm just, I mean, part of it is a good thing because I'm really like actively listening to everyone's feedback and trying to take their notes, but I'm not like logging the data as well as I should, maybe about exactly who played and what time we played and how many hands did we play and that sort of thing.
I feel like I have gotten a lot better over the years, but every game is so different on what I log. Like my game, Daughters of Asclepius, I'm logging like how many of each type of card, how many points they get, a ton of different metrics on how the people play and like what choices they make and how often things are rolled versus a card game where it's like, okay, I'm really mostly tracking how long did it take? How did it feel at different player counts? Do the cards feel balanced? Like, it's all different metrics. So there's not like a standardized way to do it. It's kind of based off feel for me. Because if I see if something's like not working or maybe working or might be broken, like if there maybe is a first player advantage, I try to figure out how to test that and track it.
On that topic, I just love that you've dusted that particular design off, because that's like one of the first games of yours I think I played. And
oh, yeah.
I've been like a big fan of it in multiple versions. So,
oh my God. That one is like my Everest. If that game gets made, I am going to be so happy. That it's always hard to have a design that you love and you just can't let go and you keep rebooting it. Because, I mean, you helped me with another one that hopefully maybe someday will get signed when it becomes in season again for pickup and delivery games.
Well, if any publishers are out there, the game will have at least one buyer.
There you go. But yeah, so like with Three Tricky Pigs, how did you go from that initial note to, it sounds like 11 months later, you prototyped it, started playtesting it. What kind of changes did you make while playtesting?
Yeah, the things that mostly changed were, I mean, the ranks of the suits themselves, as well as the scoring. The scoring took a long time to nail down. You know, I can be pretty slow to kind of like do that fail fast, get it to the table. And so it's in my head for a long time before it ever gets tested. And this one ended up having, you know, the ranks of the suits were initially like weirder and they overlapped in strange ways. Like it was like 1 to 15 and then like 10 to 30. And it was just kind of a mess. It felt thematically like it made sense, but everybody was just like, this is impossible to internalize. You can't do this. So that was a big part of feedback. And then the scoring was like originally focused solely on the bidding, and that kind of softened to allowing the players to score for the tricks that they take as well as bidding, which is nice because then you kind of still get something even if you miss your bid. Those were the biggest changes. And then just kind of figuring out the scoring and how to make, you know, people try out the different types of bids. People are like, oh, you know, it's not worth it to bid zero tricks for only 9 points. I'm like, what about 10? And they're like, 11, 12. They're like, I think 12 is good. And I'm like, okay, you know, and then so, you know, just kind of like auctioning off, you know, the value of it, waiting for people to think it's good enough. Like, all right, let's try that out.
Interesting. And how did you end up getting it published by Baron John Games?
Yeah. So Andrew Stiles, right, came on as like co-designer kind of later in the process and everything, and helped like a lot of that development work and getting it around and showing it to people with Baron John Games. So John Baron publishes games through Baron John Games. He's started by publishing one of his own trick takers, and then he sort of started publishing some other ones, and I had just connected with him through the trick taking servers that I'm in, and he checked it out and liked it, and we talked about kind of, you know, officially making it happen. Yeah, that was on a Kickstarter with three other games just, well, I guess it's 2026 now, so just last year, in the middle of last year. And yeah,
that's awesome. And you had another game that came out with them too, right? Hen House?
Yeah, Hen House, right in that sort of sister genre of like climbing and shedding games, is another one that I designed. John graciously made part of that Kickstarter. I was very excited that he was able to do that, because that was a game I first pitched myself to publishers. It was one of the first games that I, on my own, went to publishers to pitch. I did speed pitching at Origins with Hen House. So it was one of the first games I was like, this is a finished product that feels done and ready to pitch. That was kind of my baby for a long time. And so it was very nice to see it get published. And that's, for anybody interested, that's a, you know, a climbing and shedding game, which I think a popular one that's come out in the past couple of years is Scout, right? If people are familiar with that. But in general, you're playing combinations of cards, like a pair or a three of a kind, and then playing a higher combo of the same type. So I play a pair of threes, you can beat it with a pair of sixes. In Hen House, some of the twists are the way that you combine the cards, which is too weird to explain right now. And there are a couple of special cards like a snake and a fox eat cards because the suits are chickens and eggs. And so you can kind of eat them and make it easier to beat and stuff.
Damn predators. You had to put a snake in it. Well, I'm glad you told me because now I won't be playing it.
You won't be playing it because there's a snake in there?
The phobia is so strong. Yeah, no, I hate the fact that I actually have snakes in some of my games. And I'm like, ugh. Like when I was doing the two National Geographic games, both were animal themed. They told me I had to pick to put the snake into one of them. And so I put it into the scavenger hunt that I will never play because it's for small children. Yeah, my phobia is that bad.
Oh my God. I had no idea it was that bad.
Yeah, I couldn't even say the word.
You could play the game without the snakes. It'll just make the egg cards stronger.
There you go. Someone can draw over them, make them into like worms or something.
Yeah, or I mean anything that eats eggs. Make it a farmer. They take the eggs as well.
There you go. We have solutions to this problem. Yeah, no, my phobia is actually that bad. I'm working on it. I can say the word. A few years ago, I couldn't even say the word, so we called it either Danger Noodles or Schnubblues.
Yes, love it. I mean, that is good to. I will be conscious of that going forward, Danielle, in all my designs. You know, and this is why I'm not pitching you something insane.
No, you're good. I mean, that is one of those funny things that you don't think about it because a lot of people have arachnophobia, so it's like throwing a spider into a game or throwing a snake into a game. I feel like those are two very common phobias. But then you could put a clown and some people are really terrified of those. So it's like, you never really know. Also culturally, like you might put an owl into a game and then some Native American tribes are not going to be a huge fan of that game. So it's like, you never know, but it is something you can consider, I guess, in the future, but I'm not going to ding you for it. I'm mostly making fun of you. You're totally fine.
No, kind of funny on that topic. I remember playtesting Hen House at Protospiel in Chicago, right? And there's a common mechanism in climbing games called bombs, which are like special combinations that you can play at any time that sort of beat everything. And so in Hen House, the special combination that you can play, which is now simply just called the Hen House, was called a bomb. In other climbing games, it's like, oh, it's just a bomb. Yeah, it's a bomb. Everybody plays. It's kind of like Trump in a, you know, in a trick-taking game or something like that. And I got feedback at the end from someone that said that she said she didn't want to play bombs in the game because she felt like she was bombing the chickens and the eggs.
Oh, no.
She was like, I didn't want to play a bomb on them.
Oh.
She's like, I didn't like that. I don't like that you called it a bomb.
Yeah.
And that was like part of her feedback. And it was just like a really interesting eye-opening thing. Like she had never like played a game like that. And it was something that really stuck with me. And I was like, I guess it doesn't need to be called that. And so it's not. Somebody who's familiar with the genre will understand it in the game immediately as a bomb, but that word was kept out of the final rule book and the final version of the game. Just based on that one person, I was like, yeah, why not? Let's find a solution to make that better.
No, I think that's really cool that you took that feedback and you made that change. Cause I know when we were working on Tricky Kids and me being like dead against using a Trump suit, like just being like, no, I don't want to explain this, or like, I want to make this as easy as possible that someone who's never like heard of a trick taking game, played a trick taking game, can read this rule book and understand it, even though some trick takers might be like, oh, I understand, and this is somewhat layman's terms or whatever, but it's like, I wanted it to be approachable, and I did so much of my playtest with like a combination of either super big trick takers or people similar to me that it never clicked in their brain, and I do not understand why I can play like multiple hour long heavy Euro game, totally fine. Some trick taking games, I just cannot figure out. I don't know what it is about the design that doesn't click in my brain.
I hear you, but I'm glad we made one that works for you.
Thank you.
That's what that was all about, right?
Yeah, yeah. Selfishly, it's just about me. Thank you for pointing that out in this podcast. Now, I also just love the name, Three Tricky Pigs. I remember when you sent me a text message asking if I knew anyone who did art of kind of like Looney Tunes style, and I was like, what? And seeing the cover of the box, I'm like, oh, this makes sense now.
Yeah, I really love how the final design came out. When I was sort of prototyping it, I was using kind of like storybook art, I guess, almost like kind of like a watercolory vibe, like little golden book type thing. And yeah, I love this old timey cartoon aesthetic that we ended up with. It's like that video game Cuphead or something like that.
That's what I was thinking, kind of like Cuphead meets Looney Tunes meets like original Mickey Mouse on the sailor boat. Like you put those all together.
Yeah, with the weird eyes and
stuff.
It ended up being good. I mean, there's a weird menace to the pig's eyes on the card. I mean, I really like it. It's kind of strikes the perfect balance, I think, for me that like really fits the game, which is that it is pretty playful and thematically driven, but it does have, you know, a little bit of teeth to it and feels a little strange at times.
Yeah. And just talking about kind of the art and illustrations on the cards, there's dice that are on the bottom of it. What are those used for?
Oh yeah, the dice were just kind of in keeping with the aesthetic. So those dice on the cards are actually just cards that you remove at certain player counts. That's all that is. So there's a 4 and a 5 there. And so if it's got a 5 on it, it's only for 5 players, and 4 and 5, it's for both. So you just kind of remove some cards from the deck.
What was the decision for using dice pips versus just like a number or like little heads or something?
You know, I don't know. It was not my decision. It was a sort of publisher choice in the graphic designer. It is a little strange, I know, that, yeah, dice seem like they would be an additional mechanism coming mm-hmm. from our gamer brains and everything, but I think it ended up being kind of a choice that looked nice by not adding additional numbers on the cards or anything like that. Just the way they sort of look and the pips, like, I don't know, everything just kind of fit the overall look.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Since I'm friends with Erica Boares, who does a lot of design for Spin Master, she taught me a really interesting lesson to make things more accessible to people's eyes when you're looking at a card. When you have too many symbols or too much like letters or numbers or whatever it is, your brain gets like overstimulated. So a lot of times if you do have to put a combination of say like a number and then like points or player count or whatever, doing a mix between the two is always good, but especially if you can turn it into a symbol, it's really useful. Like I ended up taking that and applying it to my fireworks prototype and changed the points to just like little icons of fireworks that went off. So it's like the only numbers on there is the number that you're rolling, which is the pips that are added up together. So it was like, it was kind of cool because I realized once I did that graphic change, people were adding their totals up faster, and they also just felt like the illustrations were better. And I'm like, it was only a small tweak, and yet everyone was like, their brains are happier.
Yeah, I think it ends up working for that kind of reason.
And with this being with a smaller publisher, did you get to be more involved in the development and like the art selections and that?
Yeah. John in particular is just like really collaborative with that. He wants to like help make the game the designer wants out there. You know, it wasn't signed over to John and then handing over the reins and everything like that. I was kind of involved every step of the way. Like a first draft of the art was a little too close to Porky Pig and just a little too childlike as well. And then we kept evolving that and everything like that with the artist, finding colors that worked. You know, it was important to me to have the suits in all the corners and stuff like that so that it's good for people that kind of splay their cards in either direction, or when the cards are upside down and stuff like that, you can still tell. And just kind of, you know, making sure everything fit the look that we were going for, right? With the Huff and Puff cards on there being these sort of like weird, you know, fireplace bellows and like an insect fumigator is like what the other Huff and Puff cards, and just kind of, you know, finding the right things that fit that theme and the cartoons of that era were all part of it. And, you know, John helped streamline some of the kind of, you know, final rules as we got there. The core of the game didn't change much, but some of the evolution and even some like final numbering of the ranks on the cards and everything like that came from the end of the process that really smoothed it out.
Oh, it's great to hear that you had that kind of partnership. Do you prefer to be more heavily involved?
I certainly liked it. I mean, only have so much experience so far. I think it really depends. Like with Tricky Kids for us, I think we had opinions, but like Pandasaurus, for the most part, seemed to get what we were going for, right? And like when we started to see stuff, I mean, I think it was minor tweaks, but overall kind of like the aesthetic. I think it's a matter of both. I think like if you vibe with a publisher and you can kind of tell that they're respecting what you want to go for, I think I'd be happy handing over the reins. But the control freak in me is also perfectly happy to get my hands on every step of the process I can. So
yeah, this is why we get along. And did you have a favorite and a least favorite part of the experience of this design?
You know, it was a good thing for me, but I mean, as far as least favorite, I mean, the pitching to publishers and getting no's is tough. Having primarily experienced publisher pitching through something like the speed pitching previously, where you're kind of in that zone to maybe be a little rejected and move right on. But when you set an appointment with a publisher and like, let's play it online together, and just not feeling it is probably the least favorite part, because I enjoy all the playtesting. I mean, I think my favorite part of the process is when you come away from a playtest where everybody thinks it's done, which I mean, I feel like I could maybe say that about any game, but when you've sat it down with a bunch of people and you don't play, especially, right? And you watch a group of people play and like that there's just kind of no feedback and everybody's like, I think this is done. I think I would buy this. I mean, that really feels good to hear. And it kind of validates the whole thing and all the work that you've put into it, right?
Oh, totally. I remember when I texted you about Tricky Kids, I was like, people stole the prototype. They're just playing it without me all weekend. And you're like, what? That has still never happened. That is like the only game that's happened with, or like calling you up and being like, so I accidentally just pitched it and we have an offer. Whoops.
Yeah, and I will say it was with Three Tricky Pigs in particular, because it's a weird genre that I love, the trick-taking games and card games so much, and then I try to make them like thematic in some way, and it ends up, you know, I end up like testing and then just kind of scrapping designs because I do my best to make it like thematically coherent in some way, and if that like stops working or being interesting, I'm like more likely to try something else than to make it work. With Three Tricky Pigs, like the fact that the end product is still kind of close to the original concept of wanting the wolf to affect the trick, but not necessarily always win the trick, and the ranking of the suits kind of like matching the story, and the Huff and Puff cards getting in there. The bid cards are called like Sleep and Work and all that sort of thing. When it makes sense, and yeah, you get that feedback from people that like, yeah, it's good and it makes sense and it's fun. Like, I mean, it's just so satisfying.
Oh, totally. Listening to you talk about this just reminds me of in the past season, I had Joe on for three chapters, and very similar. The game was so easy to teach because it was based off of information people already had. They knew fairy tales. In this case, I think we all grew up with some form of the Three Little Pigs. I actually grew up with the Three Little Javelinas because I'm from Arizona and I love that book, and I buy it for literally most small children in my life. It's great because that makes the game more approachable to people who maybe don't play in that genre. Like, from what you've said on this podcast, I could play your game. I haven't actually yet, but I want to.
I know that they're not necessarily your thing. And I don't know what's in the water, because I think All Play has three witches, right? And then you talked about three chapters, and then this is Three Tricky Pigs. So I don't know exactly what's going on there, but...
The season of threes?
I will say, I think Three Tricky Pigs, if you can get a handle on... There's no Trump in it, you know, so that's good. If you can get a kind of a handle on the rules, one of the nice things about the bidding cards is you can bid taking no tricks, or you can bid taking the most tricks, right? I mean, are both options. So you've got a lot of flexibility of what to do with your hand, right? And like, they can both pay off. You're not just stuck with a bad hand no matter what necessarily, Danielle.
Woo! Solving my problems. Thank you. And you didn't put a snake in that one.
Are no snakes in that one. Yeah, I would tell you that the real solution to that problem with trick-taking games is to play one trick-taking game for like 30 hands. You know, that way, over enough time, like all the bad hands balance out. That's the real answer.
What? Who's got time for that?
People.
People. Are, not me.
Like, I've played some recently. I mean, it's a funny thing. I mean, like, to keep it kind of on the design topic, I think, right? So Three Tricky Pigs is four hands, and it is designed to kind of make any hand work. But that's something I love about certain like classic trick takers, is that they were harsher about the hand play, but it was because you'd sit there and you'd play, you know, 12 to 15 hands of a game of spades or something like that, right? Or some of these other weird classic games where you're playing all night, and so like it kind of all comes out in the wash. Like, yeah, some of your hands were good, some were pretty great, some were bad.
No, it's also funny me saying I wouldn't want to do that when I replay my own games so much. So like, I could do it. I just don't want to. Maybe one day. Yeah, I'm getting better. I definitely have started to enjoy a few more like trick-taking-esque games. So they are slowly growing on me. And I don't know if it's because they're changing how they're made to be more approachable to people like me, or if I've just played more of them, so now my brain wraps around it faster.
Yeah, I love that you say you're getting better. Like, it's a like it's an illness that you need to for not enjoying trick taking games as much as I do or something like
that. Yeah, well, I have a lot of friends that like them and I feel bad poo-pooing on it and be like, no, I want to try something else. But now I'll say if it's a new one and it takes less than 30 minutes, I will play it.
Well, yeah, you say, I know you're from Arizona. You just mentioned too. And I mean, is there like a classic card game that everybody plays in the house growing up though?
Not in mine. We played party games. Yeah. My family just found Spades in the past few years and my mom is quite obsessed and I'm like, God damn it. They did love Tricky Kids though. When I brought Tricky Kids, they were like low-key obsessed. My brother's boyfriend immediately wanted to play again, which is really cute. And then he beat all of us. It was great.
Yeah. The trick-taking like sort of genre has been very interesting in that for me it was just kind of like a fabric of like growing up. I don't have a great memory of my childhood, but I genuinely don't remember when I learned how to play spades. Like I don't remember like not knowing how to play spades or hearts, learning like euchre in college and stuff. Maybe that's just Midwestern raising taking over, I think.
That is what I've heard. It is a very Midwest thing because my cousins, they played it growing up, but I didn't. So I guess when my parents like moved to Arizona, they just chose not to, or maybe they didn't play. I'm not really sure what happened there, but yeah, no, we didn't play those games.
They were going outside is what was.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, maybe that's it. What was happening. Yeah, we were like hiking and using our imaginations outside.
Experiencing nature. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The checks. And what do you think was your biggest takeaway from this experience? I mean, you basically went zero to hero. You had three games out in 1 year, right?
Yeah, 2025 was my year, you know? It's a strange year, but it ended up going pretty well. As far as a takeaway from this experience, you know, I think it was very different than what we did with Tricky Kids, like that being a little more collaborative from the start. But Three Tricky Pigs, I think for me was one of the games I like iterated on the most, where some games I have like lost patience with that process and I maybe get bored by it and I don't feel like changing it. Something about Three Tricky Pigs kept me coming back. And so like, I mean, it was great to just see that pay off, I guess. I mean, the takeaway being don't give up, the most basic of all.
It's not basic though. I mean, you saying putting it out on the table, getting it out of your head, like, yeah, these are quote unquote basic things, but they're not easy to do. Or like being rejected, it's not fun. I get rejected constantly. If I actually wrote up my stats for how often I'm rejected, I think people would not want to be a game designer.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that. So I think that, and it's maybe just kind of a general piece of feedback that just some of the people listening to this are probably familiar with, is just that like I do a lot of things on my head because I'm slow to do the graphic design and make the changes and stuff. But there is nothing more valuable than literally just like a single playtest with other mm-hmm. people that aren't your own brain, right?
Yeah.
You find out so fast what works and what doesn't. It can be a lot of tweaking, but then you make those changes and get them in front of playtesters as fast as you can. And yeah, and just like, you know, look for patterns and follow that feedback. And you can really, I mean, yeah, keep fine tuning it till you make something you really love.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And how long did it take in total from that initial write up of an idea to the game coming out and being in people's hands to play?
I would say from literally writing that note to it getting in people's hands was probably 3 years. I would say from the first playtest to being on Kickstarter was probably closer to like 18 months. Pretty hot on, you know, hot on that game. Like, right, coming out of COVID and stuff and being able to go back to Proto Spiel in Chicago, get a lot of exposure, going to a lot of the playtesting meetups that we have in the area. I know, we miss you. We're at a new location now. Any designers in the Chicago area, Chicago suburbs, we're at Bally Doyle's in Downers Grove.
Ooh, I haven't been to that one. Wait, is that the one that used to be in Lou's, or is this a new one?
Yeah, it's the same one. The same one as the Lou Malnati's one.
Nice. Jealous. I'll definitely have to visit at some point. I know I'm going to be in Chicago at least once or twice. I have some weddings to go to. Well, all right. Then for fans that are interested in your games, are there any new ones that are going to be coming out or places that they can pick up these ones that we talked about?
The ones that we talked about, you can technically like still go to the Kickstarter and like late pledge there, and John will find a way to get them to you. There's a website called Tricky Imports com that has them. They did actually just sell out on Saturday, I found out, but they're going to get more.
Yeah, hopefully by the time this airs, it'll be replenished.
Yeah, if you are into trick-taking games and especially just kind of like supporting independent designers, there's a lot of great games on that website, both from Japan and the type of stuff that you would get from like the Tokyo Game Market and a lot of local, or I say local, I mean, but smaller designers, you know, publishers like New Mill Industries and stuff like that, that do these smaller print runs of trick-taking games. And you can find a lot of great stuff on Tricky Imports.
Excellent. And then I know you and I have an expansion to Tricky Kids. Do you want to talk about it? Or do you want me to talk about it? I mean, we could both. I'm excited. Yeah,
I don't know. Can we talk about it?
We can talk about it. I've been posting about it, so yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I mean, for anybody that's played Tricky Kids, I don't know how much you've talked about it on here, right? But quick pitch is Tricky Kids, dry erase cards. You write your own numbers on them. But then to shake things up, there's a bunch of rule cards in there. And so the expansion is going to contain more of those new rules, kind of the same mix that you get in that box, where some are just a tiny little tweak and some get significantly weirder and really mix it up. The other thing that both can add a challenge or make it easier, depending on who you ask, or what are we calling these cards? The copy the assignment cards, I think.
Copy the assignment cards? I don't know if they're going to keep that in the final version, but yeah, that's what we labeled in the prototype.
Yeah, and so right now you've got cards that you'll have that have sets of numbers to go on your card. So you don't have to do the math. All you got to do is kind of look at what's out there and look at your hand. And you just pick one of the sets of numbers on the cards. And then that set becomes unavailable to the other players later in the game.
It's so funny because I feel like people will be like, oh, I have to do math. And then we're like, oh, well, here's a different way to do it. Like, now you get to just copy this. And it's been interesting playtesting it with people who played the original and also the version where you get to do the, like, copy the assignment. Depending on the person, some people are like, oh, I love the meta of making up my own. And other people are like, oh, I don't have to do math. Yes. Thank you.
Right. Yes. It's so funny. I mean, I think back to some of the original ideas of Tricky Kids when I had way bigger numbers in mind and you were just like, no, no.
Oh my God. Yeah. You're like 100. I'm like, bitch, no. No one wants to do that.
I was like really taking it for granted. I was like, well, if a deck of cards is 13, 1 through 13, oh, then gosh. The average needs to no. be. So yeah. That ended up working out well.
Yeah, it did. I'm super excited for this.
I don't know. Was there anything else you wanted to share about that?
No, you covered it, but it was nice talking to you about it.
It was nice talking to you. So I'll see you later. Bye.
Yeah, right. Now, before we end this, I do have to ask that very important question, which is Magic Genie appears and magically made you the designer of a game that you didn't design. Which game would you choose?
I think what comes to mind is Ticket to Ride. For me, I know like, you know, Catan ends up being like this gateway game for a lot of people. But for me, I think Ticket to Ride really does that. I still like playing it. I still get like every different map and every version of it when it comes out. So I love seeing that. I mean, and it's huge. I feel like Ticket to Ride would be my like gateway to also just like designing a bunch of other weirder
having
things.
A private
jet. Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
Private jet, yes. A gathering of all of my friends.
Yeah.
Yes. A massive group of people there. Yeah, I just think I still love playing that game. Play it with family. Play it with people that are, you know, really deep into the gaming hobby, and it still hits like in all its, you know, if, especially if you try some of the other maps that have some other like just really cool rules. And so it's, I think it's a fun game in that it's, you know, sold millions of copies and then continues to be iterated on in strange ways. So you get that same core with a lot of tweaks. It's fun.
Yeah, I've not played through all the maps, but a few of the ones that I played through, it's been interesting to see the minor adjustments that kind of do make the game very thematic and different. And it's also just fun to see what like Amsterdam looks like compared to Japan, or I don't know which one we're going to, but very fun. And the small maps, like I've played Amsterdam and San Francisco and London, I think. So I think I played like three of the small ones. Oh, and New York. Actually, wow, I played four of those. Damn.
I'll give a shout out to, I think it is the fifth expansion for Big Ticket to Ride, which has the United Kingdom on one side and Pennsylvania on the other. And like both sides slap. I don't know if you ever tried that one. United Kingdom, like you can unlock like new technologies to do stuff. And then the Pennsylvania side has like just like baby's first stock market thing on it, where you're just kind of like getting shares in companies, and it's really nice.
Damn, I'll have to check it out. My friend owns like every ticket to ride and lives 20 minutes from me. So that game night needs to happen, apparently.
I would check out the Pennsylvania one for sure.
Okay.
It's good.
Cool. Well, thank you so much to everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 136, Three Tricky Pigs. And Steven, I know we went on some side tangents, but I was super happy to have you on here because I've been saying for years I couldn't wait for you to be on here. For anyone who's trying to find you online and the games you're working on, do you have any social media or websites you want to plug?
The place that you can really find me most is in the Discord server for the Portland Game Collective. It is a public server now, but my username in there is Plurpee, P-L-U-R-P-E-E. And on Instagram, you can find me at Plurpee Games. I don't post at all. I mean, I share stories sometimes, but
and I tag him in things.
And you tag me in things. I mean, like, yeah, you're handling my social media.
You're welcome.
And I, you know, I try to share when people post, but I definitely should be you know, a little more active on there. But yeah, either Discord or Instagram, you can find me. We can chat. I'll show you where all the cool trick-taking games are.
Perfect. And then I am your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on my personal social media, you can check out Instagram and Blue Sky under the username Token Gamer, spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R. And then I've been doing those fun short form videos on game design tips and all that good stuff. So you can check those out under Game Design Unboxed on Instagram and TikTok. I also have a website, gamedesignunboxed.com, if you're interested in that as well. Hopefully everyone's been enjoying those short form videos, and maybe Steven, I'll get you on one of them someday.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I made a game was to get on here.
Aw, that's a lie, but I love it.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.